Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my co-host and esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
He doesn't hit those high notes so well by the end of the week. Coming up today, how running a stop sign doesn't always get you pulled over by the cops, but might actually lead you to a championship. Why you don't want your dog middling around in Bill Snyder's flower patch. And this week, we don't think Irish eyes are going to be smiling.
Dave, let's start with first take on last night's action. We had college football and NFL on NFL. College football and Major League Baseball on center stage. What's your first take from what you saw last night?
Oh, we did have NFL as we watched the injury reports. But the first take goes back similar to what we had talked about yesterday. What an incredible World Series this has already been. Not so much from the high drama elements, but the little subtleties of baseball. Is it possible that Ian Kinsler, running through a stop sign in the ninth inning, might end up being the turning point in Texas winning a world championship? Sometimes that's what baseball is. Teddy, what do you bring with you from Thursday?
Bottom line for me, Dave, my first take, running backs don't mean shit. And I don't mean to say that politely, I guess. The bottom line is we talk about running back injuries a lot. Running back injuries get a lot of publicity when it comes to Sports Center and that sort of thing. Fantasy players will always be interested in running backs. But yesterday on this show, we talked a little bit about the absence of Pat Shedd for UAB, who's, you know, a bottom-tier NFL prospect. He'll probably be in a training camp next fall. But an injury that at least marginally affected the point spread yesterday for the UAB Blazers. My clients and I were able to cash a ticket on UAB, ignoring the Pat Shedd injury. And, of course, it didn't matter. His backup came in and ran just as well as he did. We saw it last week with LeGarrette Blount for Tampa Bay being out. Ernest Graham came in and ran just as well as he did. In general, when it comes to NFL and college football point spreads, in my opinion, the running back injury, even a key running back injury, even a guy like Adrian Peterson or, oh, I don't know, LaMichael James or something, zero to the point spread. Now, let's move on to Market Watch because we have the first numbers up for World Series game number three. As the series shifts to Texas on Saturday night, the Rangers, minus 180. Ton of money is coming on Texas already this morning. Total in that game, 9.5. The first money has come in on the under.
It's a fascinating price. We talked a lot on this show earlier in the week when we made St. Louis a series play about how well they've played down the stretch, including that 10-3 at Milwaukee and at Philadelphia over the last 6 weeks. Now $1.80. Now, let's put this in perspective, because obviously when you get to certain levels, World Series, playoffs, heavyweight fights, you tend to see a different pricing structure. Sometimes the favorites set much higher. But consider what this means. Matt Harrison has started 62 games in his Major League career. Out of those 62, only four times has he been $1.80 or higher. Let's look at those four. Twice against Seattle, when he's matched up against Anthony Vasquez, who we may never see in a Major League rotation, Charles Forbush, who's unlikely to be a longtime Major League starter. He was minus $1.80 or more against Baltimore with Mitch Atkins and against Kansas City with Sean O'Sullivan. So now the markets are telling us that that's who St. Louis is?
Well, apparently Kyle Loesch is the guy who's getting that type of Anthony Vasquez or Charlie Forbush or Mitch Atkins type of mentality. But there's also, I think, another thought process involved here, Dave, and that is that it seems to me, in general, when you're looking for a single event in Major League Baseball that really causes teams to have a hangover, more than anything else, it's going to be the blown save in the ninth inning. And that's why teams, one of the reasons why a closer is so important, why bullpens are so important in Major League Baseball. But when a team has that win in hand, and then lets it get away, just like St. Louis did last night. Again, it was a bloop single. It was kind of a fluky play. And next thing you know, it's second and third, nobody out, and a couple of sacrifice flies cost the Cardinals a chance to go up 2-0 in this series. But I think there's some hangover effect being priced into this number.
If you want to go back to the opening tease and wonder what we meant with that stop sign, let's go back to that Ian Kinsler moment so that you understand exactly what was happening there and the way it turned the game open. In retrospect, a lot of people said, should Albert Pujols have had an error when he didn't make a successful catch on the cutoff throw coming in from right field? Here's what we think happened. And, of course, we have no way of getting inside Pujols' head. Pujols was looking a little bit over to his left, and he saw that Kinsler was rounding the bag and heading home, even though the third base coach had put a stop sign up. So at that point, Pujols has to decide, do I let this throw go through so that we have a chance to get the guy out of the plate? It's that decision that got caused by Kinsler running through the stop sign that gets Elvis Andrus to second base. And it's only by Andrus getting second on that play that he's able to subsequently come around and score. That is a major, major swing in that game. If Kinsler stops at third, Andrus stays on first base, and you probably don't have a pitching change with Josh Hamilton coming up, that might have been the play that turns the series. So think about this. You're down a game. You're down 1-0 in the ninth. Ian Kinsler gets a bloop hit off the end of the bat, makes a base running decision against the wishes of his coaches, and it might have turned the whole series around.
And that's not unusual, Dave, certainly. But let's shift our focus right now to college football. We saw something, I don't know if we saw something unique last night, but we saw a head coach pretty much on his last legs last night. Arizona made the coaching change from Mike Stoops, gave him his walking papers, and was it Tim Kish took over last night. Kish, in his first game as a Wildcats head coach with a little bit of extra time to prepare, well, what did his team do? They came out in the first half, 6 possessions, 6 touchdowns against the UCLA Bruins. So now we have UCLA with Rick Neuheisel clearly on his last legs. Does Neuheisel get fired now? Does Neuheisel last till the end of the season? What's the over-under, Dave, for where Rick Neuheisel is going to be?
We checked with some good sources that you know cover the Bruins, and it's already been made pretty clear that he will get the rest of the season. They will not go through the embarrassment that we saw with like a Bob Toledo earlier in the week. Real concern, though, is UCLA didn't punch back last night. Now, when they took the field, they were 2-1 in the Pac-12. They were actually in a position to make a little bit of a run in that conference. So they had a lot to play for. Arizona came out. They threw a heavyweight punch. UCLA did not respond. They went down. They got counted out. So bad that in the second half, Arizona actually had to let up on them. Here's what's interesting, though, from the Arizona side. As we got closer to game time, people were saying, look, the reason why Stoops is out, he had lost the team. He was a strict disciplinarian type. It worked okay when they were having decent seasons or going to bowls. It wasn't working right now with this group as the losses piled up. And look at how relaxed and loose and energetic the Arizona kids were last night. Is that enough to put Tim Kish on the short list for the full-time job, perhaps?
Potentially, Dave. But the bottom line, when we talk about Arizona, is that one national TV win is not going to save their season. I think Kish has to have a complete second-half turnaround in order to be seriously considered for the Wildcats' job. And, of course, one game, not the definition of a complete turnaround.
Now, by the way, a little bit later in today's show, we're going to talk about how awkward coaching transitions can be when you don't allow the interim to believe that he actually has a shot at the job. Sometimes it can break really bad.
And it looks like I got to do push-ups again, Dave. The eye movement. For those of you who don't know out there, when we make mistakes on air, hey, it's our first week on the air. Today's our last day of the first week. When we make mistakes, we got to do push-ups after the show. And I already have the eyes shifting all around. I got push-ups waiting for me, but not just yet. First, I want to say thank you for all the great emails. We're going to answer your emails in our next segment. No postmortems on Friday. We go straight to the Inside the Numbers / email segment. And, of course, please keep those emails coming in. We have a loaded show for Monday. We're going to fit as many emails in as we can. Of course, that email address, sportsday@covers.com. You can always call that toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. And, of course, get involved in the covers.com community. covers.com/posting forum. Active threads going on right now. When we come back, we're going to go inside the numbers and answer those viewer emails.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's answer some of those viewer emails we were just talking about. And you're going to have to apologize to our first letter writer for today. I don't know how to pronounce your name. I'm going to call it Takai. If I'm mistaken, please send us an email. Let us know. Of course, sportsday@covers.com is that email address. But for today, we're going to call you Takai. If I'm wrong, so be it. He asks, how much of a factor do you feel it is for a bettor to be aware of point spreads after a team comes off a bye week, a big game win, a big game loss, a midseason coaching change, etc.?
It's very important, but with a caveat. And unfortunately, in sports betting, most things bring a caveat with them. These are important categories. There are a lot of subcategories that we will talk about a lot over the course of the weeks on this show. Here's your difficulty with them, though. Those categories bring small sample sizes. And if you just have a random mathematician out there talking about it, says, look, if you've got a sample size of 20 or less, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's 10 and 2. The size is too small to be relevant. But when we go inside the numbers later in this segment, we're going to talk about something that has a small sample size that is relevant because of something that is important for you to chart, margin from spread. So you might see that a coach is 7-2 in a particular category, but if those 9 games are all within a score of the spread one way or the other, that's not a big deal. But when you see someone who's beating the spread by a big margin when given the opportunity, now your category is significant. So yes, we'll talk a lot about subcategories, but the concern is always going to be sample size. They're just going to be so very, very small. Our next letter comes from Dan, somewhere down the street apparently. Hey guys, being a Vegas resident, what percentage of your play is at online books versus in actual sports books or casinos? Furthermore, is there somewhere to check the numbers at Vegas books, or do you actually have to go to the casino to check their numbers? Teddy, this is not going to be an easy one to answer, is it?
Well, no, the bottom line is that there is state law in Nevada that says that you're not allowed to make a bet across state lines, whether it's coming in or going out. So in theory, it is technically illegal within the state of Nevada to make bets offshore. That being said, every professional bettor that I know, literally everyone, is involved both here in Las Vegas and offshore in one way or another. So the bottom line is that while it is technically illegal, to the best of my knowledge, no one within the state of Nevada has ever been prosecuted for this alleged crime. And any professional bettor will tell you that both Vegas and offshore is going to be a part of their portfolio. You also asked about, do you have to actually go out to the sports books to get the numbers from the Vegas casinos? And the answer to that, much easier to answer. No, you do not. There are line services. Covers is involved with a line service called Sports Insights. I use a service called Sports Options. There are many of them out there that all will give you live or slightly delayed for a cheaper price odds, both here in Las Vegas and offshore. One more letter for today, our final letter, and this one comes from Kevin, and I thought it was really appropriate to include in this show. Kevin, come on, guys. Bob Seger, The Clash, Tom Waits. What are you, the morning DJs on WOLD? Or did I just beat you to the punch on a Harry Chapin reference? Yes, I cheated. I've seen Malinsky refer to him on the website. There has actually been fresh music created in this millennium. Why don't you use it?
That's just cold. I mean, that's just cold. There's actually something valid here that we can carry into a lot of different aspects of life, though. It has nothing to do with how old something is or the timing. It's the quality behind it. We're active in everything we do in trying to stay current. We're following sports in a way that where you stay fresh. We do the same thing culturally. But here's your difficulty. We have to skew not old, but to quality. There's been a quality element that's been a little bit difficult for us to trace, and a lot of it has to do with ease into the marketplace. These days, you don't have to be that good to get yourself published. You can get your videos on YouTube. You can get your audios out just about anywhere. So it's not this process where you have to earn the right to get on stage. When you go back and look at so many of the greats through our lifetime, it was a different path. And it ended up being part of what produced their greatness. Something most people don't even realize. But if you want to go back and study on this topic, look at how much time the Beatles spent playing small clubs in Germany before anybody had any idea who they were. So you learn how to perform well at your craft. You learn what the music's about. It goes the same for literature or anything else. We're going to do Shakespeare a lot in this show. We would do contemporary authors when they bring something that's worthwhile. So here's the question in return, and you could bring this into the forum or send us emails. In this millennium, what has there been that's quotable? Yeah, there have been some sounds out there that have been pretty good, but who have we seen emerge that's going to stand the test of time and give us something that we would be talking about 20 years from now? We're open to it, we just haven't found it.
Oh, come on, Dave, just say it. I'm an old fogey, I don't listen to any new music. Name me one band from this century. One.
From this century?
Yeah.
Well, there would be none, because that would mean they'd be 9 or 10 years old. that would be just a little bit too young to skew it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Bottom line, what are we going to do? We like old music, you know? You have new stuff that we should reference? Let us know. Throw something up in those posting forums. We'll be happy to try to skew a little bit younger when it comes to the music in the future. Meanwhile, we have to talk about what's going on with the covers contest right now, because guess what? We mentioned it yesterday on the show, and this probably should have been the lead of the show today. Frankly, in the covers streak section, okay, what's it called? Covers, what is it called? What is it?
Streak Survivor.
Streak Survivor, thank you. There it is right on the screen. If I learned how to read, I'd be much easier at finishing up this segment. But the bottom line, Streak Survivor, user Jacoby, last night, had 20 in a row. His 21st play was on the Texas Rangers, who were shut out into the ninth inning. And guess what? That Rangers ninth inning rally turned Jacoby from Dublin, Ireland, gave him $25,000 for nothing. No fee to get involved, absolutely free. All he did is pick 21 straight winners. Admittedly, it doesn't happen every day, but also that leaves Jacoby live. If he can pick four more in a row, he's going to win the covers Streak Survivor grand prize of $100,000. That's a difference maker in anybody's life. Congratulations, Jacoby. Very proud of what you've been able to accomplish. Best of luck getting four more wins to win that grand prize. But 25 grand, hey, nothing to sneeze at. Dave, time to go inside the numbers. And today, we're going to the state of Kansas. Interesting numbers, not necessarily related to Dorothy.
We alluded to Bill Snyder at the top of today's show, and this is going to be one of these coaching trends that we believe has significance. Small sample, but you can see the logic, and you can see the dominance. Kansas does not produce a lot of in-state football talent. So when Kansas State plays Kansas, you want to be the king of that state. You want to make sure that the cream of the talent that is available is going to come to you first. So you go out of your way in this game. You treat this much more seriously than any other game on the schedule, regardless of what else is happening inside of your program. If you're Kansas State, you're going to win enough games to go to a bowl this year. This is among the weakest teams you're going to play. Doesn't matter. You're going to take this game seriously. You want that in-state dominance. So when we go inside the numbers and take a look at what Bill Snyder has been recently doing in this matchup against the Jayhawks, look at how stunning these are. The last 14 meetings, 13-1 straight up and against the spread, but the margin from the spread, 234 points. That tells you that Bill Snyder's been beating the spread by almost 17 points per game. That's why we don't mind the short sample. It's clear, he's not just beating the spread, he's crushing the spread in these games.
Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six Pack.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
apparently White Stripes has been started in this century, Dave. So we have at least one band from the 21st century that, of course, someone sent into us. Thank you, David, for the email. So now we know one band from this century, and clearly we got to know more.
No, you know one. We still haven't got to my part of this yet.
Okay, let's start with today's insider six-pack of fine knowledge for you, and we're going to start in Tulane. We talked earlier in the week about how head coach Bob Toledo had either been fired, resigned, forced out, whatever you want to call it. Now we have some stuff coming to the surface about the offensive line coach Mark Hudson, who's taking over as the interim head coach. It does not look like Hudson is going to be a serious candidate for the long-term job. If you want to make a favorite, in fact, in the future book for who might get this Tulane job, look perhaps at LSU running back and recruiting coordinator, I should say, Frank Wilson. He appears to have the inside track for that Tulane job. But when it comes to Hudson and his situation with Tulane for the rest of the year, the coaching staff, along with him, being that they're not likely to be retained in New Orleans in the future, that means that for the back half of the season, these guys have as much work to do on sending resumes out as they do in designing game plans. And of course, let's not forget one more thing. When you're a coach at Tulane, particularly an assistant coach, a position coach, someone who's not at the top, not a lot of financial wiggle room right there. These guys need to find jobs. That's probably going to be a higher priority for the Tulane coaching staff than actually designing quality game plans.
Time to clear up some more news from earlier in the week. And by the way, when we talk about injuries early in the week and we don't get them clarified by Friday, feel free to come into the Covers Forum for the show. We'll be in there Saturday morning answering the questions that we couldn't get on the air in time to let you know what you're going to need to know. One of the games we know you're going to be looking at, and we're going to get some big ones in the next segment, you're going to be staying up late for New Mexico State at Hawaii. We know you are because we know that's what you do. It's the last game of the day. It's the bailout special. We had touched upon the New Mexico State quarterback injuries earlier in the week. Matt Christian injured his non-throwing shoulder last Saturday. He is going to be the starter, but he's not necessarily going to play the whole game. Backup Trevon Caldwell played so well last week, they're going to give him a little bit of playing time as well. So Christian starts, but he will not play the whole game.
Let's talk about the Chargers and the Jets for a minute. And for those of you who don't remember, when Norv Turner got the job as San Diego's head coach back in 2007, I believe it was, Rex Ryan was a shortlist. He was a finalist for that job, didn't get the job. And that led to this fascinating exchange between the two coaches this week. Rex Ryan said, quote, I think I would have had a couple of rings. I'm telling you, those teams were loaded, no question about it. Basically, dissing Norv Turner, which is something we all do from time to time, but you don't often hear it from head coaches. Norv Turner comes back with a quote of his own. Quote, Ryan called him to explain the quote, apparently, and Turner replied, quote, I was a little bit surprised by the call. Then after that, I saw the quote. I didn't have a chance to ask him this, but I was wondering if he had those rings in the same place with the ones that he's guaranteed for the last couple of years. Of course, Rex Ryan's been pretty aggressive about guaranteeing Super Bowl rings for the Jets. He's yet to deliver any of those rings.
Yeah, a lot of little intrigue going on for that matchup. And Ryan took it up even one more notch. Starting at running back this week, LaDainian Tomlinson, ahead of Sean Green. Tomlinson, of course, a former Charger. Puts a little different spark element on the field. Problem, though, that Ryan has, Tomlinson's just 3.3 yards per rush. The Jets don't have a run of more than 20 yards all season from any of their running backs. Looking for something that's not going to be factored into the line, we're going to use the phrase thinking outside the box on occasion on this show. That means something that's not in the stat columns, something the odds makers are not going to incorporate, and something the markets aren't going to be thinking about. Let's play around a little bit with the Tennessee Texans matchup this week. Linebacking coach for Tennessee, Frank Bush. Where was he the last couple of years? He was the Houston defensive coordinator. Got fired last year. They did have a bad defensive season, not all his fault. Had to start a couple of rookies in the secondary. Lost DeMarco Ryans for the last 10 games of the season. So now think about how this can build in going forward. They've had 2 weeks to prepare with a coach who has a chip on his shoulder because he was fired by the other side. Got a couple of things working for you. One, he knows the players in that defensive huddle inside out because he's coached them. But number two, who was Frank Bush up against every day in practice those last couple of years? Matt Schaub and the Houston Texans offense. One of those little subtleties that might mean a better game plan on Sunday than you otherwise would be looking for.
We don't know who the starting quarterback is in Seattle right now. We know who it's going to be this week when they go to Cleveland. It's going to be Charlie Whitehurst, who started the season as the backup. Tavares Jackson got hurt, and he needed more than last week's bye to recover from his strained pectoral muscle. But now the question becomes, what happens if Whitehurst plays well? Pete Carroll's been very non-committal about offering Whitehurst the full-time starting gig. Tavares Jackson certainly improved from the beginning of the season to where he was in the last few games before he got hurt. And, of course, we're going to make updates on this front on Monday's show, certainly at the beginning of next week. I know from the letters we've gotten, there are plenty of fantasy players out there who are definitely interested in this type of information.
This next bit is not going to help for fantasy players, but it could sure matter from a point spread standpoint. Now, first, a little bit of good news for Pittsburgh. Troy Polamalu is going to play this week. They were worried that he might have suffered a concussion. That graded out clear. It's a defensive front where the problem is. Not only a couple of Pro Bowlers still out this week, Aaron Smith and Casey Hampton, but Hampton's backup, and a longtime backup has been a good contributor, Chris Hoke, he's going to be out. So starting at nose tackle for the Steelers on Sunday, Steve McClendon, an undrafted free agent from Troy State. This isn't exactly the steel curtain that they're putting out there against the Cardinals.
So there's your insider six-pack. I'm not going to do that. Oh, I guess I just did. Sound effect one more time. You know, that's something that I need to get better at. Bottom line is, when we come back, it's money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! Let's start with tonight's national TV matchup on ESPN2. We have Rutgers traveling to Louisville. Louisville right now -1, total of 40 in that ballgame. And Dave, this is one game where one of the things we've been talking about all week, the luck equation, certainly comes into play.
Why are we talking about this game? Partly, it's the ESPN game on a Friday night. We know you're going to watch. But let's also talk philosophically a little bit. And what we have in this game is it's the teach a man to fish instead of giving a man a fish concept. We talked about the notion of luck that a reader brought to us real well in a question earlier this week. Here's the classic type of game where it could be too big of a factor. You've got two teams that are nondescript. Let's put them at that C+ category. But two freshman starting at quarterback. So national TV, bright lights, Terry Bridgewater versus Gary Nova, that's an awkward matchup. One of the reasons why we talk about this in terms of luck, when bad teams play each other and young quarterbacks are on the field, is the game more likely going to be won by someone or lost by someone? You're going to find out over time it's so much easier to handicap and play to the winner than to take one of these games and try to figure out who the loser is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, this Louisville offense has really been awful. I mean, there's nothing, no sugarcoating it. They've been awful so far, and particularly since Bridgewater has taken over as the starting quarterback. We're talking about one touchdown in the last 10 quarters for Louisville, and that touchdown came with less than a minute to play, trailing 14-0 at North Carolina. Made a big difference from a point spread perspective, made absolutely no difference in terms of who was going to win that game. So it's a Louisville team that hasn't been able to grind out any offense. Rutgers, at least with their freshman quarterback, they've been able to grind out enough offense in order to win some ball games. Is that a big confidence difference between these two teams, Dave, as a result?
I'm not sure, but here's what we are sure of. It's one of the biggest turnover gaps you're going to find this late in the season in a head-to-head matchup. Louisville, -5 so far this year. Rutgers, +13. Okay, now, you're going to see that and think, well, Rutgers is making the plays, Louisville isn't. Let's look to Rutgers. No, here's the problem you get. When turnover gaps are that extreme, they're more likely to revert back to a norm instead of continuing at the level they are. So that plus 18 gap that Rutgers has over Louisville, that's a little bit too extreme. Not saying that it will revert back tonight, but it's more likely in the weeks ahead to revert back rather than continue.
And even the total's a little bit of a problem to get involved with in this ballgame. Dave, we're talking about an over-under of 40, which is about as low as it gets in college football when it comes to decent weather ballgames. But is that over-under of 40 really like an over of maybe 33? Because we know one of these quarterbacks are going to throw a pick six. Maybe both of them will throw a pick six by the time it's all done. A bottom line is, I don't bet under 33 in college football. If I have to play this game, I'll probably look at maybe a little bit more of a high-scoring affair, even with the quality of the defenses that we're talking about and the potential struggles for both quarterbacks.
Let's go to Columbia, Missouri. One of the bigger games on the Saturday board. Right now we're seeing Oklahoma State 6.5, over under of 69. If you remember back earlier in the week when we talked about how the top eight teams in the BCS have gone 41-9 against the point spread, Oklahoma State has certainly contributed to that.
It certainly have, Dave. And, you know, there are a lot of concerns about the Oklahoma State defense in the betting markets. I think that's why we've seen the Cowboys priced as cheaply as they've been priced throughout the course of the season. They've been an undervalued commodity. And a lot of that has to do with their defense statistics. And let me just read off some of these numbers. Number 100 in the country, the 100th ranked defense in the nation, 427 yards per game. That's certainly factored into this point spread. It's been factored into every point spread that we've seen from Oklahoma State so far this season. But what those numbers aren't taking into account is that, number one, this defense has been amazing at creating turnovers. 21 turnovers created all so far this season. And number two, those defensive numbers haven't mattered because they're blowing everyone off the field and just playing a little prevent defense throughout the second half in the majority of their games, which allows opponents to pick up yards, allows opponents to score some points, and yet doesn't allow them to win the ballgame, either straight up or ATS, or at least it hasn't so far.
Now, also keep in mind, too, that when you look at the total defensive yards allowed for Oklahoma State, that's a little bit misleading because of the pace of the game they play at. No one in college football the last 2 years has played faster. That's what they want to do. They've averaged 83 offensive snaps per game, and that's a big part of this matchup because Missouri has some weaknesses in the defensive front. They've got some injuries there. That means a lack of depth over the course of the afternoon. But here's where the Oklahoma State defense has their real test. Missouri has been very good with the football. Only 7 turnovers in 6 games. That's pretty good for the play count they get to. This might be the one week where Oklahoma State finally has to stop something. And the question is, what are they going to stop? Missouri's balance, over 1,400 yards rushing, over 1,400 yards passing. There are only 3 teams in the nation that have topped 1,400 in both categories. If it comes down to Oklahoma State having to actually make stops for a change this week, especially on the road, we're not convinced they can do it.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you 100%, Dave. When we start to look at these real numbers for the Oklahoma State defense, their pass efficiency D, number 23 in the country, their number 11 in sacks, and we talked about the turnovers that they create. I know that the numbers aren't that good, but Missouri's offense still very much a work in progress. Okie State is not a team I'm in any rush to stand in front of. Now let's go to East Lansing, where we're talking about Wisconsin. Minus 7 on the road against Michigan State, total in that ballgame, 49.
In a postmortem earlier this week, we broke this down into what we called our Senior Bowl category. That's taking the careers of all the 50-year seniors on both teams, the past 4 meetings it would be, and comparing how these teams have done to see if that tells you something different from what the current marketplace, and we mean current in quotes, because sometimes the current markets can get skewed by things that don't carry the same substance. Last 4 meetings in this series, 123 to 123, each team wins twice. Most recent meeting, Michigan State by 10, on this field last year, and it was an interesting win by 10, in that Michigan State was minus 3 in turnovers. Now, if you're playing a team like Wisconsin, you go minus 3 in turnovers and still win the game by 10 points, that tells me that you might be better. So what's happened since then? Russell Wilson's a quarterback for Wisconsin. He's having a very good season, but Scott Tolzien was pretty good last year. Here's what we believe. Of the top contending teams for the BCS championship, no one has played a weaker schedule than Wisconsin. Not only weak in terms of the quality of opponents, but they haven't played a road game yet. There was one game on a neutral field, Soldier Field in Chicago against Northern Illinois, where they had most of the fans, but they put up a lot of big numbers against weak competition. They may not be what the markets think they are this week.
Sure, let's take a look at these games that they've played so far this season. We're talking about UNLV, you know, who has one win so far this year. They played Oregon State, another team with one win. You talked about the Northern Illinois game, a game that was purportedly at a neutral site. It was all Badgers fans there. They played, was it South Dakota College? They had the game against Nebraska, and Nebraska may be nationally ranked in the top 20. I'll tell you what, you talk to anybody here in Las Vegas, Nebraska's not a top 25 team. They were okay. They're certainly not good. In front of the home crowd, the Badgers blew them out in the second half, and they played Indiana last week, who's arguably the worst team in the Big Ten. No question in my mind, this is the single toughest test that the Badgers have faced this year. And if you watched that Michigan State defensive line just blow the Wolverines off the line of scrimmage last week, it's certainly going to raise some concerns about how that Badgers offensive line is going to fare against the toughest DL that they face so far this season.
Let's go to South Bend, Indiana. Our Notre Dame is 9.5 and 57.5 over Southern Cal. Kind of a head-scratcher of a line if you've been following these programs. And we don't even have to look at the senior aspect. Let's go back to the last nine games where Notre Dame has only been able to beat Southern Cal one time. That was a showdown game in the Coliseum last year where Notre Dame scored with a minute 40 left to win by four. And how did they clinch it? They intercepted Mitch Mustaine at the one-yard line in the final minute. Mitch Mustaine. Teddy, why am I even using that name?
Only because that a year ago we saw the backup quarterback for USC. Now we're going to see the starting quarterback for USC. Of course, that's Matt Barkley, who's been phenomenal so far this season. And the scary thing, if you're a Fighting Irish fan, is that we've seen the USC offense look fairly dynamic so far this season. They've had nice run-pass balance. We've seen certainly Robert Woods become an absolute monster catching passes downfield. But if you watched USC play last week at Cal, a defense that had been somewhat suspect finally came through with their first really dominant performance of the season, forcing turnovers against the Bears, shutting down that Cal passing game, and holding the Bears in San Francisco to a season low of 9 points. So now USC starting to get good play on both sides of the football.
Okay, Jacob, let's get that graphic rolling. We're going to tell you where we're going with this one. The best of this week's board, it is Southern Cal in this matchup. That's going to be our college play of the day because this line is in the wrong place. The markets keep trying to force the Notre Dame program out to a level that they just don't belong at. In two seasons, or season and a half, let's say, under Brian Kelly, they've already lost five times outright as a favorite. Notre Dame is a national contender. Their last major bowl win was 1994. The loss to South Florida looks worse as the weeks go by when we see how bad South Florida's turned out to be. The close win against Pittsburgh, that looks worse as each week goes by. Notre Dame and Southern Cal have even talent, even speed, even size. Southern Cal can win this game outright, but will certainly take the points for their comfort zone as our play of the day.
When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the NFL as Money Time continues.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Let's head across the pond to London, England, where Tampa Bay and Chicago face off this coming Sunday. Right now, we're looking at the Bears, about a 1.5-point favorite. Total in this ballgame, 43.5.
Little surprised to see the Bears come favorite at first. Then I realized, no, it makes sense. Sunday night, national television, dominating win over Minnesota. The type that makes people think, okay, the Bears have found themselves. They were division champs last year. They're kicking it back in. We're not sure. If you saw that game, you both saw and heard the little bit of a skirmish that Mike Martz and Jay Cutler had, problems that apparently are real. But look at a few other players that are involved with management right now in contract disputes. Matt Forte, Lance Briggs, Chris Harris, all having issues. So bad with Harris that they had him inactive last week. But Harris may have to start major right. Looks like he's not going to be able to go at safety. He goes from being inactive to not only active, but back in the starting lineup. I see some chemistry issues here. The Bears may not be at the top of their game. Teddy, especially with the travel circumstances surrounding this.
Absolutely, Dave. This is one game where travel issues really matter, and it's a real differential between how these two teams have approached their given situations. We have the Bucs, who went to London early in the week. They went there on Monday. We have the Bears, who have not, or actually left and are arriving in London, at some point this afternoon or evening. So Tampa Bay likely to be acclimated to playing in a very different environment. Chicago, maybe not so much. I talked a little bit at the top of the show about how running backs don't mean squat, which is probably what I should have said. But the bottom line is running backs don't mean squat for Tampa Bay. We saw LeGarrette Blount out last week. Didn't matter. Ernest Graham came in, ran for 109 yards. He caught 7 passes. It made absolutely no difference in terms of how the Bucs were able to play between Blount and Graham, even though they have very different skill sets. And let's not forget this Tampa Bay team, 16-9 in their last 25 games. That's every bit the record that the Chicago Bears bring to the table.
Let's go to Detroit, where the Lions right now are 3.5 and 47.5 over Atlanta. But in this game, we are going to talk about a running back as perhaps being the key. The Lions' pass rush has been outstanding. It's been so good that it's been able to patch up a defense that has issues in so many other places. Their biggest one, though, let's look at this Lion rush defense this season. So far, 777 rushing yards allowed already, 5.2 per carry. You come in with Michael Turner and an offensive line that can wedge out a little between the tackles. That might be the way to not only defuse that Lion pass rush, but also that Detroit crowd, maybe putting Atlanta right in the heart of this one.
And we saw something last week from the San Francisco defense. Vic Fangio is a coordinator who I have an utmost respect for. But they gave the rest of the league a game plan on how to shut down Calvin Johnson in the red zone. And we saw last week the Lions repeatedly tried to get the ball into Johnson's hands using those same type of jump ball passes that were working for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. Didn't work against San Francisco. They used a bracket coverage that made it very, very difficult for Johnson to have any room at all to leap and catch those TDs. I wouldn't be shocked at all if we see continued red zone struggles from a Lions team that doesn't run the ball well between the tackles and may have issues throwing into the end zone here.
Unfortunately, we have a judgment to make about Atlanta before we pull the trigger here. And if you've been watching the show this week, you notice that we did a postmortem talking about Carolina and the fourth quarter issues the Panthers have tended to have. Well, some can make the case Atlanta turned the corner last week in beating Carolina. But remember, Atlanta trailed by 3 at home in the fourth quarter of that game. Was it necessarily the Falcons turning the corner, or was that case of Carolina once again not being able to finish?
Yeah, free bet in this one, Dave. I'll probably be looking at the under between the Lions and Falcons. You talked about Atlanta's desire to punch the ball between the tackles and run clock against a spotty Detroit defense. I talked a little bit about the Lions' red zone concerns. You put a good run game together with red zone issues, that leads towards relatively low-scoring ball games. Let's shift over to Minnesota right now, where the Green Bay Packers, -8.5, 46.5 is the total. Welcome to the NFL, Christian Ponder. Oh, by the way, you're going up against Dom Capers' defense twice in the next 3 weeks, including a Monday night affair at Lambeau Field. But at least Ponder is going to get his first shot here at home in front of a friendly crowd. Not sure how friendly this crowd is going to be by the end of the first quarter, Dave.
I'm not sure I get this one. I certainly understand Donovan McNabb getting benched, and not just going to the bench, but maybe leaving the locker room and leaving the NFL. He may not get another opportunity. But if you know that Christian Ponder is the quarterback of your future, look at your schedule layout. After Green Bay this week, you go to Carolina to face one of the weakest defenses in the NFL, and then a bye week. Wouldn't it be so much easier to let Ponder sit and watch the Green Bay defense? Because in 3 weeks, you're going to play the Packers again, as he alluded to, on that Monday night game. Sit and watch this week. Learn a little bit about that defense instead of having your confidence probably crushed. Because the difficulty is you're going to have to produce if you're Ponder. The Packer offense is playing at a truly, truly unique level where you can't expect to make stops. Take a look at those passing numbers. 9.72 yards per pass. That's almost unheard of. So you're going to have to produce. If I'm the Vikings, I already know I'm not in the playoffs this year, So I'm going to hold off on Christian Ponder. I'm going to give him next week's start at Carolina with a better chance to win. They didn't regroup in the bye week, and instead of throwing him to the Wolves this quickly.
And one of the things we need to talk about with this Packer offense that's generating more than 9.7 yards per pass attempt is that Packers defense that's holding opponents to 6.47 yards per pass attempt. That's better than a 3-yard differential every time the two teams drop back to pass, Green Bay versus their opponents. That's the stat that matters in the NFL right now. We look at Minnesota and their running game, 5.1 yards per rush with Adrian Peterson breaking off big carries. They're only allowing 3.5 yards per attempt in the modern NFL. Rushing differentials doesn't matter quite so much. Passing differential matters a lot.
Let's go to New Orleans, where NBC was so excited back in the summer when they thought, wow, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Super Bowl rematch, national TV, Sunday night. And now NBC has to broadcast a game with the highest line on the board, the biggest quarterback mismatch of any game on the board, and that we're actually putting Christian Ponder a little bit ahead of Curtis Painter when we do that. New Orleans 14-48 over the struggling Colts.
Well, one thing we've seen from this Indianapolis team so far this season is we've seen the ability to compete. They just haven't been able to win. And even last week, if you look at the final score, you say, oh, they lost by 10 in Cincinnati. Well, you know how that 10-point margin came. Indy driving down the field or trying to drive down the field for the game-tying field goal or game-winning touchdown, about 3.5 minutes left on the clock. Plenty of time, no reason to force anything. It's a 3-point game. They can tie, they can win. And then Pierre Garçon decides to, I'll try to get an extra yard. Oh, here's the ball. Take it back in for 6 points in the other direction. So it's a Colts team that's been hanging tough. And even that 10-point margin last week, heck, we saw them on TV hang around against Tampa Bay for 4 quarters. We saw them hang around against Pittsburgh on national TV for 4 quarters. Gut reaction here, yeah, it's a national TV game. Maybe Indy can do it again this time.
We know you got to give you something on this game because you're going to want to play it. It is that standalone, similar to New Mexico State, Hawaii. I'm not as comfortable with Indy plus the points here, but there is a direction we can look at. How about the total? Sean Payton, as a favorite of 7 points or more, 13-7 to the under in his NFL career. When he gets a chance to control a game, he will. Now let's close out this board, saving the best for last. Let's go to Nashville, where Tennessee is 3.5 and 44.5 over Houston.
You know, 3-3 versus 3-2 matters. Right now we're talking about a 3-2 Tennessee Titans team, a 3-3 Houston Texans team that's been struggling a little bit in recent weeks with the injuries that they've suffered. The Colts aren't a monster in this division. Jacksonville's not going anywhere. These are the two teams that will be in the hunt for the AFC title, the AFC South title, I should say, throughout the course of the season. So huge divisional matchup between two playoff contenders.
So what happens when you've got teams that are only B-minus in a showdown game? Coaches tend to get a little more conservative because it is such a big game. And we see a direction where we can go with this one. Early in our Insider Six-Pack, we talked about the impact Frank Bush can have from a coaching standpoint with Tennessee of putting a game plan together here. Now, take a look at the big playability for these teams. You don't see much, do you? Without Andre Johnson on the field, Houston becomes extremely limited. Without Kenny Britt, Tennessee becomes extremely limited. Matt Hasselbeck's passing stats look so much better than he's actually been. Remember, he's got 2 80-yard touchdown throws this year that came on short, broken plays that just happened to flow big. And the guy who would be the home run threat in this game, and maybe the most interesting stat we're going to talk about on this whole show today, Chris Johnson, 83 rushes, 250 yards. Of running backs who have 40 carries or more this year, he's dead last in yards per rush attempt.
Like I said, Dave, running backs don't mean squat. Chris Johnson having the worst season as a professional. He made all the money. Now he's not producing. He's running behind a good offensive line for the Tennessee Titans. And yet, as you mentioned, dead last in the NFL in yards per attempt for qualifying rushers. And, of course, it hasn't mattered. Tennessee sitting here with a winning record. If they win tomorrow, they're in position to put themselves in the driver's seat in that division. But it's time to go right now to the play of the day. And, of course, we're going to have to look at Tennessee under 44.5. These are two teams that are going to struggle to make big plays. Expect a grind-out affair between the Titans And the Texans will take Houston and Tennessee under the number. And that's going to wrap it up for the weekend edition of Vegas Sports Day. Thanks so much for watching and spending time out of your busy day with us here at Vegas Sports Day. We'll do it again next week. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Thanks for watching. Enjoy the games and good luck.